Devoured Podcast.
Hello and welcome everyone to episode 9 of Devour the Podcast. I am your host, David, and with me today is a very special, well, not guest, but my new co-host, Jamie.
Hi, thank you.
Yeah, of course. So why don't you introduce yourself to the peoples?
I'm Jamie, and some people may know me as Maven or Movie Maven from horrormovies.ca, and I guess that's pretty much it. You'll learn everything else you need to know about me by hearing me run my mouth. Awesome. Which I will do quite a bit.
So yes, and quickly I want to say that horrormovies.ca, the forums over there, is my new place that I'm sort of hanging out now and getting my horror fix, because I hate the internet for the most part.
And we're very glad to have you. It's always good to have someone with an intelligent opinion around.
That's why I actually really like that place, because as anyone who's probably figured out from reading my blog or from listening to this show, I suffer fools not well. And so I don't hang out on a lot of forums, because there's typically people there who piss me off. And I can't stand it. So today we are doing two movies. No, neither one of them is Paranormal Activity 3. That's coming eventually. But we are doing Insidious as our feature presentation, as well as Primeval for our It Came From Instant Queue. And we're going to be starting up a new segment that we're going to get to in just a second, about the news, because, you know, I figured we'd add a new segment. So let's jump right into the news.
Be quiet a second, will you?
It's 8 o'clock in Los Angeles. It's 9 o'clock in Denver. It's 10 o'clock in Chicago.
In Baltimore, it's 6:42. Time for the 11 o'clock report.
Here's Johnny!
I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Game over, man! Game over!
Your mother sucks cocks in hell.
All right, and here we are with the news. So for those of you who are familiar with this show and or any of my previous shows, you know that I typically don't do the news because, A, I don't particularly usually care about horror news. It's not that important to me, but I figured it might be interesting to add to the show. So first up is Maria Bello is in talks to star in James Wan's House of Horror. All the news, by the way, comes from Bloody Disgusting, because I'm incredibly lazy. Bello is currently in talks to star in the film produced by James Wan and written by Max LaBella. And the story is, in the aftermath of a horrific massacre, lead detective Mark Lewis and police department psychologist Dr. Elizabeth Klein question a suspect for the brutal murder of 5 college students. Apparently the evil made him do it. So,
isn't that always the way?
Of course. So I can't think of anything that Max LaBella has written that I can think of off the top of my head, but James Wan's producing, and it's not bad.
Interesting that you should bring up this piece of news when we're going to be talking about Insidious, which he directed momentarily.
That's exactly
you did that.
Yes, I did. So, no word on who the director is. I believe the story said that the director of something, I think it was like Them or something, it was some French film, I don't remember exactly what it was initially attached, but then is no longer attached, so they're searching for a director. In television news, which I'm actually really excited about, there's a possible Hellraiser series coming. Sonar Entertainment, previously RHI Entertainment, is developing a Hellraiser for the small screen along with some of the franchise early principal players. According to Variety, Sonar is co-developing with Eric Gardner's Panacea Entertainment, and Hellraiser, a TV series based on the cult British horror franchise. Gardner will exec produce along with Larry Cuppen, whose company New World Entertainment is behind the first two Hellraisers. Sonar announced one of the most successful and terrifying franchises in film history, yada yada. Blah, blah, blah. Okay, fine. Okay, so basically, there's no word on when, what network, or really anything, but there's possibly a Hellraiser series coming, so that's awesome.
That would be interesting.
And this is
like, I wonder exactly how much they would be willing to do for, you know, television, because Hellraiser is, it's a pretty bloody series.
Oh yeah, definitely. I think that ideally they would probably get it onto something like HBO or Showtime.
Mm-hmm. Then you can have fun with it.
Exactly. And this is coming about a week after we heard there was news of a possible Nightbreed series that Clive has been talking about on Twitter and online. Also mentioning he's been hoping to get it on Showtime or one of those other paid cable channels that you can get away with things, because a Nightbreed series would also be awesome. So hopefully those two series will come to fruition and not get dumped on something terrible like, you know, FX or something.
Although I do have to say that I was a big fan of American Horror Story.
You know, I got through and 10 minutes of the first episode and was just like, nope, not interested.
Really? I thought, well, you know, a lot of people, I know every time I talk to someone, they're like, I don't, you know, I'm just so confused, because all through the entire series, they kept throwing things at you and, right. And you know, shit's just coming out of the woodwork. But I loved that about it. There was a feel to it that I really enjoyed. Mm. So, but I will say that they did go, that was on FX.
Yeah.
And so they, you know, they took it farther than I would have expected. So maybe, I don't know, maybe that shows that they're willing to do that. I don't really know how that ended up doing, though. I mean, I don't know. I never saw the numbers on it.
Yeah, I don't know. I think there's a second season coming, but I'm not sure. I mean, I know, it seems like cable channels like FX and AMC, of course, with Walking Dead, are starting to get a little bit more, a little more ballsy with what they're able to put out on TV.
Mm-hmm.
And I was recently, or some time ago, I was started watching the FX series Nip Tuck on Netflix, and I was really surprised with what they were getting away with on that. And that was from 2004, 2005, I think, is when that started.
Mm-hmm.
And they were getting away with quite a bit. So if it goes to something like AMC or FX, that's fine. But I think preferably it would go to like HBO or Starz or Showtime.
Oh, yeah. Showtime, give it the Dexter treatment.
Exactly.
HBO, give it the True Blood treatment. You know, then, you know, there'd be sex and blood and gore and all the good stuff.
Yeah.
So.
And so our final bit of news is about the documentary Despite the Gods. Penny Vosnick directs Despite the Gods, a documentary on Hiss, set to premiere at the Canadian Film Festival Hot Docs this coming April. And Despite the Gods brings the behind-the-scenes look at, I believe her name is Jennifer Lynch's Bollywood-Hollywood action film about a man-eating snake goddess, which was Hiss. Out of her depth shooting on location with an Indian crew and two top Bollywood stars, Lynch turns her production into a vehicle for her own self-actualization, paying no regard to timeline, budget, or reality. As the story in front of the camera derails, the story behind the camera explodes. This was actually Hiss was actually something I've been meaning to watch. It's on Instant Queue right now, and it's been sitting on there since it was available. But there's actually an Indian movie theater about 45 minutes away from where I live that my girlfriend works at. She was trying to get me to go see it, and I just never got around to it, because apparently horror movies just don't come out that often in India. So I was really excited. I'm still really excited to see Hiss, but from what I've heard, it was terrible from most accounts. But
well, I can't weigh in on that. I'm afraid I haven't seen it either, but I'm always down for a good doc.
Yeah. And this one actually sounds like it'll be really interesting. So something worth checking out when it comes out. So that's it for the news. Next week I'll probably get a few more stories. I just didn't feel like I didn't find a whole lot of interesting stuff on Bloody Disgusting this afternoon. Although apparently Platinum Dunes may be getting involved with the Halloween series.
I almost brought that up.
Yeah.
Because my hackles rose as soon as you uttered the words Platinum Dunes. It was just immediate. Like, I feel the chills running up my spine. And I was a friend of mine told me that little bit of news last night, and he's like, I really hate to be the one to tell you this. He's like, actually, I fucking hate being the one to tell you this, because you're gonna be so mad. He's like, but and then, yeah, I mean, so then he said that they have gotten their hooks into the rights for Halloween. And I don't know what, that's all he knew about it though. Do you know anything more in depth about it? Like, are they actually really planning to do something with it?
What I got from the Blade Discussing article, like Landstat, was that if they were going to take on the project, it wasn't necessarily going to be Halloween 3D like they, like Dimension had been talking about, and that it might be another reboot of the franchise. I don't know.
Are you a Platinum Dunes fan? I probably don't have to ask, but
I'm not necessarily a fan of them as a company. I've liked some of the movies they've put out. I enjoyed the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remakes for what they were. Friday the 13th, I enjoyed when I saw it in the theater on opening night. Other than that, I've tried watching it since, and I get about 20 minutes in and then shut it off because it's boring as shit.
It is so boring. But I thought, even opening night, I thought it was boring. I don't know what I did dragging my ass there. The Friday the 13th, I'm a huge slasher fan.
Oh, yeah.
Friday the 13th series is very important to me. I grew up watching every one of those in the theater, except for the first one. I saw that on cable first. But then after that, I saw them all in the theater. And I was young. I mean, I was really young, but my parents were huge horror fans. So if they went to see a horror movie, they were taking me along. And so I remember being this twisted little seven-year-old. After watching part three, I came home and I remember sitting in my swing comparing the kills in part one to part three. Now, there's something wrong with that, I'm sure. And, you know, a therapist would have a field day. But, you know, hey, I turned out okay. But when I saw it, I was so disappointed just because there was nothing, you know, you had like Ninja Jason.
Yeah.
But, you know, and there was just really nothing going on. I just thought, how did all this stuff happen yet nothing happened?
Yeah, I went opening night to a packed theater, and it was a lot of fun because everybody was screaming and yelling at the screen, and it was a lot of fun. And then I got out of the movie and I was like, wow, that kind of sucked. That was kind of like my response when I went to see My Bloody Valentine 3D. It's like, I knew going into that one it was going to be terrible, but Friday the 13th I had hope that it would be good, and then it wasn't, and I was just disappointed.
See, we're completely opposite on that. I loved My Bloody Valentine.
Oh, I thought it was great in the theater. I haven't watched it since because I was like, that wasn't particularly good, but it was fun.
It was a lot of fun. But I was hoping for good things going into that. I was terrified going into Friday the 13th. And you know what it is? It's just, I have this stigma against Platinum Dunes. It's because they keep fucking things up. And just like, every time I'm like, please just, I'm giving you one more shot.
Yeah.
Do it right. You know? And it just doesn't happen.
Yeah, once the trailer for Nightmare on Elm Street came out, I was just like, oh, this is going to be bad. No way you're getting my money. And I'm glad I didn't spend the money to go see that one because holy shit. Ugh. That's its own review that will come later. I have to rewatch that. But the first time I watched it, I had actually gotten a bootleg copy somebody gave me. I took it out of my DVD player and broke it after I was done watching it. It was so fucking terrible. Ugh. But that's its own review. We will get to that one eventually. Because I am going to rewatch it and probably still hate it. But. I don't know how I feel about the Halloween franchise going to Platinum Dunes. I mean, I've never been that big of a fan of the series. I mean, I like the first two, and I like Season of the Witch, and I like Halloween 4.
Right.
I've seen Halloween 5, and it's not very good. I didn't see Halloween 6 yet, and H2O wasn't nearly as bad as I remembered it being. Like, I remember when it came out and really liking it then, and then kind of watching it maybe 5 years later after that I'd seen it initially and been like, oh, this sucks. And then watched it like 2 months ago and was like, oh, this isn't that bad. And then,
I've only seen it once.
Yeah. I was surprised. I was like, wow, this was not nearly as bad as I remembered thinking it was. And then Resurrection had a
wow.
There were some good ideas in it. It started out strong. And then Busta Rhymes showed up.
Right. Actually, you know, the funny thing about that one is there were some pretty tense moments.
Yeah.
I thought it was an interesting idea. And, you know, especially considering, I mean, look at society today. I mean, everything's a reality show. You know, it's all around us, whether we like it or not. So it was an interesting idea because that's what's going on.
Yeah, I think it was.
And
it was a good, you know, good idea and a good,
yeah,
decent story. Not so good on acting, and some of the technology is laughably out of date now, and what it's doing is even funnier because it's like, there's no, the technology that you're using in this movie, A, couldn't do what you're trying to get it to do at the time that it came out, and B, it's so laughably out of date that it's like, what?
And that's that always happens in movies, and it always cracks me up. They've always got this technology that, you know, the computer, they'll be using DOS.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's like, oh, what's the, is it Swim Fan? Or there's some movie where they're sending like pictures back and forth over the network in school. And it's just, I don't know. There's some, bringing it up and not remembering it completely, but it was, it was very poorly done.
I know. I don't remember seeing Swim Fan, but I did see, what was it? Cry Wolf was really big, where they were like playing some like game on like Instant Messenger and getting murdered. It was a really kind of bad PG-13 slasher movie that everybody hated on when it came out, and I thought it was moderately okay. But that's about all I remember. I was like, it was moderately okay. It was PG-13, and the redhead from the Dawn of the Dead remake was in it. That's all I remember.
Oh yeah, the chick that went after the dog.
Yeah,
that one. Yeah.
She's actually a good actress, but just that one scene, I was just like, "Are you? Oh, you fucking idiot! You're going after the dog. Just leave the dog."
There's the dog was fine anyway. You know, they weren't fucking with the dog. But yeah.
Anyway, back to Halloween.
Right.
So
what are we talking about?
Yeah, Halloween. And I did see both of Rob Zombie's Halloweens in the theater, and I will say I enjoyed them in the theater. And then I made the mistake of buying the unrated director's cuts on DVD, and I don't understand what the fuck he was thinking. Because the unrated director's cut of Halloween, he adds an unnecessary rape scene, which right. I was like, why? His escape scene was fine in the movie. This is unnecessary. The rest of the movie was fine. And then part two goes from making some kind of sense in the theater to a complete and utter clusterfuck of no idea what the hell is going on in the director's cut.
I thought I was on some kind of acid trip when I was watching that movie. I was like, is this happening? What?
Yeah.
You know? I was so confused.
I mean, the ending wasn't great in the theatrical cut, but at least it made sense. And then the unrated cut is just like, here's some weird shit going on. And it's like, what? What are you doing? Rob, you're pulling a House of 1,000 Corpses here. Don't do that.
You know, the first one, and I don't hate him for the first one. There are things about it that I don't really care for. Like, the thing I love about Carpenter's Halloween is the fact that, you know, and this has been, people have been hashing this over for a long time, you know, here and there, but it's the fact that Michael was a normal little kid from a normal neighborhood, and this came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, but in Zombie's version, it is not completely unbelievable that this kid would go off his rocker and start slaughtering people. So to me, that kind of took away part of the mystique. And although I do cut him a lot of slack for it, because it, to me, it is clearly a Rob Zombie film.
Definitely.
He couldn't make Carpenter's Halloween the way Carpenter did. Oh. And it come off believable from him, because that's not what he does. So, you know, I know he's a fan. He did it because he's a fan, and, you know, I respect him for that. The second one, I don't know what the fuck was going on there. I really don't. I tore it a new one when it came out, and I just sat there going, what?
Yeah.
And then bless his heart, he keeps going downhill. I'm like, you know, I love Devil's Rejects. And
that was really good. Yeah. I was surprised by that one. Because I remember the hype of House of 1,000 Corpses was like, it was coming out, and then it was delayed, and it was coming out, and it was delayed. And then it finally came out, and it was getting really great reviews around horror fans. And I watched it on DVD, and I'm like, this is fucking terrible. And I've watched it like three times, and I'm like, nope, this is terrible every time.
See, and I was so excited because I'd been reading about it in Fangoria for ages, you know, as they're following the story of how it's coming out. No, it's not. Just kidding. Yeah. Yes, it is. No, it's not. So when it did come out, I went to see it. I was really excited. And I sat there thinking, you know, I remember seeing this the first time when it was called Texas Chainsaw Massacre. You know, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah,
I like the family. I really like the Firefly family. I, you know, they're fun. But I don't think he brought anything new or interesting to that. But I also know it's not his fault completely. You know, he wasn't allowed to do what he wanted.
My biggest issue with that movie was that it felt like an overly long music video. Like, that just the whole thing. There's one sequence that I really thought was good, which was the really long pull away scene before the cop gets shot. That really nice crane shot. That whole sequence was great. The rest of the movie was shit and just overly. Just too much weird shit going on for the sake of it being weird. And when Devil's Rejects came out, I was really against seeing it until I watched it on DVD, and I was like, wow, this is actually a really fucking good movie. Like, that was what I had expected out of House of a Thousand Corpses. Because it's like, right. I'd been a fan of Rob's music, and I was like, okay, he's clearly a fan of horror. Mm-hmm. Where is... That didn't come through in the last one, whereas in Devil's Rejects, it made much more sense. Yes, this is definitely made by a horror fan. And then when Halloween came out, I went into it, you know, people were already bitching about how much they hated it and how horrible he was ruining the franchise, yada, yada, yada. And I was like, well, A, it's a remake, and B, it's a fucking different director, so I'm going to take it for what it is, which is how I treat every remake. I don't judge it against its original. I judge it as its own film. And I enjoyed it. It was pretty good for what it was. The second one... was okay in the theater. Yeah, I mean, there was some weird stuff, but I like that he took the different parts of the franchise and put it together, you know, having, you know, Michael's sister be a focal point of the story from the beginning and all these other little bits and pieces of continuity from the old story, from the old franchise that never quite got fixed together and making it all work. But yeah, the unrated DVDs were just terrible. Platinum Dunes taking over the franchise. It can't be any worse than what Mustafa Akkad was greenlighting before, so.
Well, that's a good point. And honestly, that's not a series that once you get past the first three, I'm not emotionally tied to it. You know, I was always a bigger Jason fan than I was a Michael fan anyway. I love Halloween 1, I love Halloween 2, and I love Season of the Witch.
Yeah.
Once you get beyond that, I'm not upset about it. You know, because I didn't care for the direction the story went in originally. I was just like, eh. I thought it was a little too convoluted and unnecessary. You know, I liked the simplicity of what it was. And when you start trying to explain everything and make it all make sense, and then, you know, you've got this whole cult thing going on.
Yeah,
and I don't care.
It's like,
you know, I was like, I don't care.
Part four and five. Five's not that good of a movie, but four was pretty good because it introduced, you know, it kind of said, oh, well, Lori's been killed in a car accident. And here's her daughter. And now, oh, maybe she's going to be the evil's been passed along to her. And then five kind of just meanders into stupidity. And then having not seen 6, but going directly into H2O, I was actually impressed because they actually managed to tie in a whole bunch of the continuity from 4 and 5 and possibly 6 into that intro of H2O with the cork board with, you know, all the different like little bits. I was like, oh, this all makes sense now, because even though you're kind of throwing out all of that continuity, you're at least saying yes, that still happened, and you know, Donald Pleasant's character is dead, and you know, Jamie Lee Curtis's character didn't die in a car crash. She was, you know, something happened to her. She escaped and ran off somewhere. And then of course the whole thing about like her daughter, like the never referencing her daughter in that movie was a little weird, but I figured it was just one of those things that didn't need to be addressed particularly. Like she probably just didn't know. She's just, you know, she just sort of severed ties with her kid because, you know, it was the best thing she could do, I guess. But, you know, I'm trying to put way too much thought into the Halloween franchise, which it's like trying
which
to.
Isn't even why we're here today.
No, it's not. So let's wrap this nonsense up and get on to our It Came From the Instant Queue selection.
It Came From the Instant Queue.
Since the mid-1300s. A time when the Black Plague decimated more than half of Europe, there has been great turmoil within the church. Lucifer sees this opportunity and chose a leader to recruit a great following and administer his prime evil throughout the world. And now, he wants you.
And I think your phony priest has something to do with it. Oh, come on,
Bill.
Not
all.
This again.
That's not all. I think your grandfather's involved. Why does he look so young, Alex?
Listen, I think her life is in danger.
Never forget, Alexandra.
Do you know who she is?
What can be done?
They must be destroyed.
She was obviously drinking and choked on her own vomit.
A story of burning passion and the quest for everlasting life.
All right, so this week's It Came From the Instant Queue is the 1989 film Primeval, directed by Roberta Findlay, written by Ed Keller and Harriet Vidal, starring William Beckwith as Thomas Seton, Christine Moore as Alexandra Parkman, and Mavis Harris as Sister Angela.
And, you know, those Parkmans are evil.
Huh?
You know, those Parkmans are evil.
And then the story, what little story there is, a coven of devil-worshipping monks living in New York City search for victims for their sacrificial ceremonies. Yeah. Holy shit, this movie was hysterically bad.
It was really bad. I had a good time
watching.
Oh,
I did too.
I was ripping on this thing from one end to the other. It was but in a good-natured way.
Yes.
It was kind of fun.
This was this is the epitome of the kind of bad movie I love to watch, because within the first, I think it's like the first 3 minutes, we get a horrible-looking decapitation, and then that horrible Satan puppet thing, and the overly dramatic voiceover. And I mean, like, it starts with this ridiculous voiceover. And then the bad decapitation happens, and from right there, I was like, oh, yes, I'm going to enjoy this movie a lot. This is going to be
voiceover,
awesome.
The voiceover was so serious.
I'm
like, am I watching the trailer? Did the movie start? He had the trailer voice.
Oh, my God, yeah. And from there, it's just like bad dialogue, terrible acting. And this is probably the second movie where sexual assault has made me laugh my ass off, because Humanoids from the Deep was the first one with the fishmen and the fish rape, which was hysterical. And then this one, we've got our main character is describing how she was molested as a child. And it's supposed to be like this really, you know, deep and sad moment. But she's overacting so much that it's just fucking hysterical.
This is what kills me about that scene. They're on a romantic carriage ride.
I know.
Which, by the way, apparently they couldn't afford to have the horse for the entire sequence. So then you hear these really horrible canned horse sounds coming from the sides. And, you know, this is supposed to be like a romantic carriage ride with her fiance, who, by the way, I don't remember them getting engaged. One second, they've been dating for 3 months.
Yeah, exactly.
The next second, he's her fiance. And I'm like, what the fuck happened here? When did that happen? Did I miss it? Maybe it was on the carriage ride, and I don't know. I was so distracted by that story.
You know, honestly, I tried to rationalize what was going on in this movie. And about the time that they were doing the first ceremony, and they were chanting, and I thought, wait, shouldn't it be Ave Satani instead of Ave Satanas? And then my brain went, nope, fuck you, just watch this movie and enjoy it. I'm like, okay, I don't care anymore. So there was probably a lot of plot holes that I would have picked apart usually, but I was just so busy just watching the nonsense happen.
Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of that. A lot of that nonsense. She's like, let me tell you about when I was molested as a child. And he's like, you really don't have to.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, I want to.
I have to. I need to.
And I'm like, please don't.
Yeah.
But it was, you know, it was very funny, sadly. I mean, her story, I was just
I'm
supposed to think this is funny because it is.
Exactly. It's like, I understand this is not supposed to be funny, but the delivery, just her overacting was hilarious. And then, and the story is just so ridiculous. And here's the thing I was kind of thinking about is that they sacrifice this group. They sacrifice blood relations for a 13-year period of immortality and power, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm thinking, why is it only 13 years? What kind of shitty deal did you strike with the devil that you have to kill our blood relation every 13 years? I mean, come on now.
He announced it. That's exactly what I said. I'm like, really?
Yeah.
For a family member, I only get 13 years? This is a shitty, shitty deal.
I know.
And if you keep killing off your family members, how the fuck are you going to have any more?
I know. You know? And it's like, it has to be a virgin. It's like, Jesus Christ, for a virgin family member, it should be like 20 years or something. And you know, after that first 13-year break, you're like, oh, okay, it's great. And after that, it's like 13 years is just flying by after that.
Oh, yeah. Especially when you go through, like, some of them were several, like, well, a couple hundreds of years old. They've been doing this a lot.
Hundreds of years old, and that ending sequence was fucking hysterical. Oh, my God.
And it's getting harder to come by virgins these days.
I know, and this was, like, 89, so.
And I love the, the orgy scene.
Oh,
it was,
God. That
was great.
And then the best line that, for I don't know how. So those two cops who the one cop starts out as being like a fairly serious character, and then the last half an hour suddenly they're the comedy relief. And
yeah, they're like Keystone cops, and they both look like Mario.
Yes, they've got.
I can't even tell them apart.
In the comic, like they have pistols that I swear to God would have looked like something the Joker would have in the 1960s Batman show. They're just
expecting bang at the end of it.
I know. I was like, why do you have pistols with barrels that long? It doesn't make any sense. And then you texted me with the line of "cut the crap, fart breath," and I was just like, oh yeah, that's right, he did say that.
Yeah, and when he said that, I said, really? Did he just say that in this? You just said that?
Yeah, at that point, I was so just awash in the stupidity of the movie that it just, I was still trying to, like, comprehend why their guns were so ridiculously big. That when the line came out, I was just like, really? Okay, oh, wait, no, they're shooting the Satanist priest, and he's not getting killed, okay. And then I thought they were killed, and then they weren't.
Oh yeah, their guns were as awesome as their Brady Bunch perms and their porn stashes.
Oh,
you know that they were just full of awesome. And my favorite thing is when all you know this is Satan. Well, you know the devil puppet thing.
Oh my God!
And that was awesome. You know Satan. You know you can't kill Satan unless you have a sharp stick and you stab him with it because
you're
then it's all over.
Yeah.
So keep that in mind, kids. If Satan ever shows up on your front door, just grab something sharp and stab him one good time. It is over.
Yeah.
He is down for the count. And then everyone around him starts looking like they've seen the Holy Grail. Their skin's melting off, you know.
Yeah, it was like Raiders of the Lost Ark, except for half the budget.
I meant to say the Ark. I fucked up.
That's okay.
Fucked up the reference. But you know, like suddenly everyone around him has opened the Ark, and their skin's melting off, their hair is turning gray, they're falling apart, and I'm like, wow, that was a piece of furniture. I think I don't even know where she got that from, but it wasn't even like a special thing.
Yeah, that was. Oh my God, this movie. So I can't recommend this as a serious film to watch because it's not at all serious. But it's definitely a film that I would say if you want to sit down and watch something really funny, or if you do like a bad movie night with a group of friends where you get drunk and watch a movie, this is the perfect movie to watch. It is fucking hysterically bad. And
mercifully only 83 minutes long.
Yeah. Although so. It does feel a little bit longer.
It does. It does. And so thankfully they did cut it off that soon because, you know, well, there was that whole ending, which honestly, it feels like they just kind of stopped. To me, like when I was watching it, you know, suddenly there were the credits, and I'm like, oh, we're done.
Yeah, it's like all of a sudden it's like, okay, the evil guy, then the stuff happens and the cops, and then this thing happens, and then boom, it's over. I'm like, all right. I'm not gonna argue with you because it's over now, and I don't have to watch this nonsense anymore. But okay, sure.
All in all, though, it was a really good time for people who, anyone out there, because, you know, there are connoisseurs of bad films.
Oh,
people
yes.
who purposely set out to watch bad movies. I'm one of them. I mean, I have my days when I'm just, let me please just watch something crappy. And, you know, if someone's in a mood for something like that, this is a perfect example of it. And I guarantee you haven't seen it before because no one has seen it before.
Yeah, this is one of those amazingly bad movies that's just, it's everything you want in a bad movie. It's got ridiculous dialogue, terrible acting, horrible special effects, lots of boobs too. And it's just, it's so 80s cheese that it's just amazing. So.
Oh, how about the best friend that works out all the time?
Oh,
and
God.
I don't even know.
I don't remember what her name was or who she was supposed to be.
Her name was Brett, but her accent was atrocious. And talk about overacting. I think they just threw her in. They threw her in for comedic value. Little did they know the entire film has comedic value.
Yeah, and that was the thing. It's like I got that the film was supposed to be trying to be serious, I think. But then she was the comedic value. And then all of a sudden at the end, the cops are suddenly funny. So I was like, did they plan it that way? Did they realize halfway through what they were making? What the hell were they doing? Because that last battle scene thing with the Satan puppet was sort of serious, I guess.
I really think they tried. I really think they, you know, they were trying to make a good, scary, serious movie. They just failed miserably at that and went into comedy. And, you know, if you take it for that, you know, take it for what it is a really bad, laughable film, and you know, you can't go wrong with that.
It was easily one of the best bad movies I've watched recently, and probably one of my favorite that I've done for It Came from the Instant Queue. And listeners of this show know that I love bad movies, and there are two kinds of bad movies. There's the entertaining kind, and there's the kind that make me want to kill myself because I've wasted my time. And this was not one of those movies. This was the good kind of bad. So. Highly
recommend
this. Yeah,
this is definitely fun. Definitely fun. The whole time I was watching, I was like, I cannot wait to talk about this movie. That's why I texted you. I was like, cut the crap, fart breath?
Yeah.
For real?
Yeah, I texted him like, oh yeah, he did say that.
That was awesome.
I was just so mesmerized by their ridiculously oversized pistols. I was like, why? Why? This makes no sense. Just the leaps in logic in this movie are just astounding, and some of the facial expressions from the handyman were fucking just golden. Oh my God. It just, so yes, Primeval, if you haven't seen it, it's available on Instant Watch. You have to check it out. It is fucking hilarious. This is like a step above a trauma movie, but barely.
Yeah, I'll go along with that.
All right, so with that, let's go ahead and jump right into our final movie of the evening, the 2010 film Insidious.
And now our feature presentation.
Are you ready?
Yeah.
Sweetie?
Morning, guys.
He's not in a coma. They don't know what to call it. There was something in there with him.
Dalton!
I know someone who can help.
We took tri-field and EMF readings of the whole house. Wiring, alarm clocks.
I don't think bad wiring is the problem here.
I want to leave. I want to leave this house. What is it?
It's not the house that's haunted. It's your son.
warning, the following review contains spoilers. So, Insidious, directed by James Wan and written by Lee Whannell. And if you know those names, it's because they were the team that gave us Saw and Dead Silence. And the synopsis is, a family looks to prevent evil spirits from trapping their comatose child in a realm called the Further. That's really on the nose. Thanks, IMDb. Patrick Wilson stars as Josh Lambert. Rose Byrne is Renee Lambert. Ty Simpkins is Dalton Lambert, their son. And the wonderful Lin Shaye is Elsie Rayner.
She was phenomenal.
She was awesome. And I love Lin Shaye and everything.
So do I.
First off, I had been hesitant to see this one when it came out initially because I'm a big fan of the original Saw. I love the soundtrack. I love the style of the film. I love the actors in it. I love the story. I love the twist ending. Just the original Saw is a perfect modern giallo to me. It was awesome, and I think it was great.
I agree completely. Completely.
Dead Silence, I saw in the theater. Not so much.
Oh, good. So okay, see? Oh, that's so good. We're right in sync here. I'm loving every second of this.
Dead Silence was not very good. I was very disappointed with it. I mean, it was cool to see the puppet from Saw pop up in Dead Silence, and I was really hoping it was going to be good because I've always enjoyed the whole, like, evil ventriloquist doll thing. And if you've ever seen the film Magic with Anthony Hopkins. Mm-hmm.
Scary as hell.
Yes! Actually, quick tangent about that is that my dad was a magician for many years, and there was a magic shop he used to take me to, and the guy had that poster for Magic on the ceiling, and I used to stare at it, and it had the tagline of whatever the tagline is, I don't remember what it is now, but it had the puppet face on it, and it said Magic, and I always wanted to see that movie, and I finally saw it on DVD in probably 2006 when I was working at Blockbuster. They had it, and I was so excited to watch it, and I watched it, and I was like, wow, this actually pretty good. So, and it was really weird because it was like a really young Anthony Hopkins, and I was like, holy shit, Anthony Hopkins was a young man at one point. Because I've always grown up watching Anthony Hopkins as being like, you know, old Anthony Hopkins. So anyway, that's,
I mean, he's looked exactly the same for the past 20 years.
Yeah,
so
and seeing it Magic as like a romantic lead, I was like, what, this is, no, you're Hannibal Lecter, stop that.
Magic was great. That's that was one of my mom's favorite movies, and so I watched it a lot as a kid because she watched it a lot, and it just freaked me out.
Yeah, it is.
Still freaks me out. You
fucking
know?
Movie. And if I can get a copy of it, we'll definitely do it for the show. But Insidious, when it came out in 2010, was getting a lot of positive buzz, and I don't go to the theater very often for movies. Mostly because I'm broke a lot, and I don't really ever want to waste the money on movies, especially if it's something if I'm not, like, super into seeing it, I'm not going to go see it.
A lot of horror fans feel that way today.
Yeah, I think I think the last two movies I saw in the theater were Captain America and Tron Legacy. Those were the last two movies I went and saw in the theater, and those were both movies I really wanted to see, so... Mm.
Yeah, well, you find yourself, I mean, movies are so expensive.
Exactly.
Everyone's fucking broke. And we're so jaded because we keep getting fucked over that you find yourself wanting to be really careful what you throw your money at.
Exactly. And I don't trust quote unquote normal reviewers, you know, the people who do movie reviews for newspapers and such, because the quote unquote normal reviewers will take any chance they can to shit on a horror movie. So I don't take their reviews of anything seriously because they're not genre fans, so they're obviously going to shit on a movie that I might enjoy. And I typically don't trust other, like, I don't really look at movie reviews for new movies that are coming out when it comes to horror movies particularly, because yeah, I don't necessarily always agree with, it's one of those things where I've learned quickly from being online so long and looking at movie reviews is that the best way to find a movie reviewer that you like and then follow their work, because if it's somebody who either, you know, even if you don't agree with everything they say, if they've at least got a similar mindset that you do to movies, you're going to be able, they'll steer you in the right direction. Whereas if you're just, you know, jumping to whatever reviews you find, you're going to get a whole lot of different views on things, and it may not be, you might get recommended something you don't like. So
that, yeah, that's exactly right. Excellent advice too, because even if you find that there are things that you know you don't have in common with said reviewer, yeah, that you have decided to follow, like say for instance they really like, you know, haunted house movies,
right,
and you really don't, you know, for whatever reason, and then so if they give a like an over the top fantastic review of a haunted house film, then you're like, well, you know, maybe I should give this one a shot,
right,
because I know that they like them, but they really liked this one. So
exactly,
maybe since I'm not so crazy about him, I might think it's okay.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like a litmus test. You know, you can just follow them and use them as a barometer. You don't have to agree with everything they say,
yeah,
but you know, and that's what I do. I mean, well, I actually don't read a lot of reviews because I do reviews.
Yeah.
So
that's kind
so
of my thing.
I,
it's like once you start writing reviews for either for a personal blog or for a website, you stop reading everybody else's work because you don't want to get tainted too much.
Exactly. You don't want to be influenced.
Right.
You don't want to. You definitely don't want to go into the film with anything on your mind,
yeah,
that someone else has planted there. And I really don't like to write a review until, I mean, to read anyone else's work until after mine is on paper and set, because
exactly,
I don't want anything affecting me. But then after I do, there are several writers that I will then go and seek out what they have to say about it, because I know that either we, you know, generally agree or don't, and I like their style.
Yeah.
So, but anyway,
so,
Insidious.
Insidious. I had one. It was actually recommended to me by a former coworker who was really, really behind it. He was like, oh, you're going to really love this movie. And I was like, Dead Silence sucked, so they're kind of on edge with me. And then it'd been sitting on my instant queue for fucking ever, basically since it was available. And as we were deciding what to do for this week's episode, I think you picked Insidious, and I was like, all right, well, let's do that one.
I did, because I've been wanting to watch it again.
And I had not seen it yet, so I sat down to watch it, and I was really, really impressed. I enjoyed it I enjoyed the actors in it. Patrick Wilson, I think, is fantastic in everything.
I've loved him since Hard Candy.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I was sold
at
Hard
Candy. He was great in Hard Candy. He was great in Little Children. He was great in Watchmen. He was excellent in this. There were... For what it was, I think that it's a pretty, it was an interesting take on the haunted, not necessarily haunted house, well, it is kind of a haunted house story, but also just a haunting story in general. And that's kind of why I liked it, because it wasn't the typical haunted thing that we always see.
Mm-hmm.
I like that when James Wan and Lee Whannell worked together, they seem to have some themes that kind of carry through each film. Either with Saw, they had the kind of the... In this one, you had the continuation of the creepy old lady imagery from Dead Silence.
Mm-hmm.
You had the kind of the possibility of an infidelity with the husband, the way you did with the in Saw with Dr. Gordon. And, of course, if you're paying close attention... the puppet's head from the Saw movies is drawn on the chalkboard in one shot in Patrick Wilson's classroom.
Yes.
Which I thought was awesome.
Uh-huh. I love little Easter eggs.
Exactly.
Like that. They make me happy.
But I was kind of, it started out a little slow and I wasn't sure really what I was getting into. It was sort of, there was sort of the hints of strange things happening. And then you got more strange things happening, and then the son goes into a coma, and then all of a sudden there's physical manifestations happening, and then they move to a new house, and we will probably be spoiling this, so just fair warning, I'll put a spoiler warning before this review goes up. They go into a new house and the manifestations are continuing, and they call in, you know, the mother comes, Josh's mother comes in, and she sees this thing. I don't know what they called him in the movie, but I started thinking of him as the satyr, the guy with the red face.
She actually referred to him as a demon.
Okay. Yeah, the demon guy, and he's really creepy looking, and really, I was impressed with that. And then Lin Shaye shows up with her ghost hunting.
The Geek Squad,
yeah. And
they and all their steampunk.
Yeah, all the ridiculous equipment, which was actually kind of funny. I really liked that they had that.
I did. I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that a lot. You know, and he's like, I make it myself.
Yeah.
I'm like, yeah, it's a viewfinder. Yeah. I mean, a viewmaster. Yeah. Damn it.
The viewmaster, the steampunk viewmaster for seeing ghosts was pretty awesome. So they finally do like a sort of a seance thing with Lin Shaye to figure out what's wrong with the kid. And she wears this really crazy gas mask thing, which was actually pretty cool looking. And they find out that the child, whose name I'm drawing a blank on now,
Dalton,
thank you. Dalton is actually an astral projector, or he can astrally project himself. And he's been trapped in this place called the Further, which is kind of this weird, like, nether realm between our world and the beyond or whatever. And the only way he can be saved is Josh has to go into the nether and find him. And we find out that the reason Josh... They mentioned early in the movie about how there's only one picture. The mother, actually, is the one who notices it. Josh's mother. When she's talking to Josh's wife. She says, oh, you got a picture of him. And there's this kind of thing. But they mentioned earlier in the very beginning about how there's no pictures of Josh as a kid. I think it's Dalton or the other son is sitting with Renee. And he's like, oh, well, don't you have any pictures of dad when he's little? And she's like, no, I don't. I don't know why. So that becomes, we find out that the creepy lady we see at the very, very beginning of the movie, that whole opening sequence with the kid sleeping and the creepy lady, that's actually Josh as a kid, and he passed on his power to astrally project onto his son Dalton, and so that's why he has to go back and save him. But there's no pictures of him because all the pictures have this creepy old lady who is getting closer and closer to him, and that's the whole big reveal of, you know, why Lin Shaye knows him and all that, which was fine. The scenes in the Further, I thought, were visually very interesting. I like that they kind of seem to touch on that there was something in the last house that had happened. You know, we have those scenes where he goes into their previous house and the you know, kind of creepy family is sitting on the couch, and then the creepy family has been shot by the creepy looking daughter. And then he finally he finds the red door that his son had drawn a picture of. And he's attacked by the weird-faced guy. There's another weird-faced guy. There's the demon, and there's this other guy in a trench coat. Who never gets explained and doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. But I just...
It doesn't matter because he scared the shit out of me.
Yeah.
And that's what's important about him.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Basically, when he showed up the first time, I was like, oh, holy shit, that's kind of creepy. And then I was like, well, he doesn't really make a whole lot of sense in context, but neither did the little kid who was running around. So I was like, all right, well. And then, of course, when they explain the whole The Further thing and we see all these other beings that are trying to break through, you're like, okay, these are just demons, or these are all just spirits that happen to be, you know, coming together. And the layer of the demon was really awesome, visually speaking. It was just great lighting, great set work. You can obviously tell that James Wan is very inspired by Dario Argento with the lighting. It was
excellent.
Obvious in Saw, and it was even more obvious in this one, that Suspiria had a
I love the music choice too. Nothing's creepier than fucking Tiny Tim. Yeah, anyway,
that was that's one of those things where a lot of different movies, a lot of directors have done that. Let's use a really upbeat song to be unnerving in a scene, and sometimes it works, and sometimes it really, really doesn't. And it works in American Werewolf in London, which I was watching the special edition documentary recently. They use Blue Moon several times in scenes where horrible things are happening, and it works really well. And it worked really well in this one with the Tiny Tim song, which is just a weird song in and of itself, But when it's playing and you've got this demon who's like sharpening his claws on this giant, you know,
oh Lord
thing, I was like, well, that's really fucking creepy.
You know what really, and that scene right there highlights one of the things that you are guaranteed to scare me with in a movie. And that is, I don't care what the creature is. I don't care if they're zombies, werewolves, demons, whatever. If they're minding their own business, they don't know that I'm there, you know? Mm-hmm. And then I look over 2 seconds later and they're staring at me.
Oh yeah.
That will fuck me up every time.
Yeah,
Scene where that, you know, he's trying to get his son loose and all of a sudden the kid's like, Dad, he's looking. And then you turn around and he's like tapping on the glass and I'm like, oh God.
That's like nails on a chalkboard for me. Just like,
oh Lord.
The sound of things like tapping against glass in that way, or in, like I said, like nails on a chalkboard. Those are just sounds that in movies just unnerve the shit out of me.
I was a jangled mess. I was wound up tighter than some, like a spring loaded something that spring loaded. I don't know. I didn't come prepared with a reference for that, but I was just, my knees could not have been any farther up under my chin. And I've seen this fucking movie before. I've seen it before. And it scared me the first time, but I thought, well, you know, surely it won't happen again. Right. You know, I mean, I know what's going to happen. Well, it has been long enough, apparently, to where I wasn't completely expecting everything. And my entire viewing experience of this consisted of me balled up in a knot on the sofa and just springing at every sound. I have 3 cats. Mm-hmm. They like to run across things. Yes. They like to make sounds. They like to leap on me at, you know, at really inopportune moments. So the entire night was me going, ah, 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 you know, and then I don't like things that crawl on walls. I don't like things that reach out from under beds and grab you. I don't like things that are pacing outside the window. This film hit on every childhood fear I ever had. Mm-hmm. You know, that when you hit the light switch and run and dive into bed, yeah. You know, because under the bed won't get you. And if you stay under your covers, then you're okay. And all these things, that the whole time I'm watching it, I'm like, I'm a child again. And this movie is scaring the crap out of me. And it did. It really did. I was a mess. And by the time it was over, I was shaking. I was like, there were times when I was almost in tears. And I, you know, this sounds like I'm exaggerating. And yes, I'm a horror fan. And I sound like a big pussy right now. But the reason I am a horror fan is because of those times when I can find something just like this,
right,
that will reach into my soul and twist it, you know, so that I can't even breathe.
Right.
And that's why I love what I love. It's so rare, unfortunately, to find something like that. But when I do, I'm in love with it. And it was so bad last night. I could not sleep last night. It was awful. Every time I would close my eyes or try to close my eyes, I'm picturing this, like the old woman or the freaking demon or something like standing in the corner. Right. And I'm just like, I'm done. This is...
You know, as I was watching the movie... Some of the jump scares got me because they're jump scares. And I'm not typically a fan of movies that use a lot of jump scares because I see it as being way too easy. It's one of those things that I've watched so many horror movies that so little really scares me anymore. Because, like, you know, I'm very similar when I was a kid. I was terrified of the dark. I grew up watching the Universal Monster movies, and those gave me fucking nightmares. Mm-hmm. You know, I could see a 10-second TV spot for, you know, the newest Nightmare on Elm Street movie, and that was it. I'd lose my shit. And over the years of growing up and continuing to be interested in this stuff, but always being afraid of it and always having that fear of the dark, and then finally, as I got older, I kind of started just plowing through these movies and just watching them and enjoying them for what they are. A lot of the stuff I've seen has desensitized me. So it's like when I see a movie that's really... really hits me hard, something like Martyrs or Cannibal Holocaust the first time I saw it, things that really just gut punch me, I'm like, holy shit, this is amazing, you know, because
Wreck.
I feel
Wreck
like
did
I
that for me.
Yeah, I think Wreck had some pretty good moments to it.
That thing had a hammer. What the fuck was that thing doing with a hammer? That's all I'm gonna say.
It's been a while since I've seen Wreck, so I don't really remember that scene. The one that I remember, typically for me, it tends to be ghost movies, because that's one of those few things that really kind of creeps me out. And when I saw the original Japanese Pulse, I saw it on DVD, and I think it was like 2006. I was sitting in my old apartment with my old roommates. They were in their various rooms. And if you've seen this movie, you'll know exactly what scene I'm talking about. It's the scene in the hallway where the ghost woman is walking towards this character, and the music is kind of creepy and weird, and this ghost woman does this simple, like, dip movement. Like, it's just a weird way she moves. It creeped me the hell out. I was like, nope, nope, nope. I actually went into my roommate's other room. I was like, you are coming in here to watch this with me now. There's no way I'm finishing this movie by myself.
That is so awesome. I love you right now for admitting that.
Oh, yeah.
For one, I don't feel like such a pussy anymore. But
yeah.
No, but I mean, that's fantastic. Yeah. You know.
When I find movies like that, it's just like, yes, this is awesome. This is why I still watch these movies. Because it's not just because I enjoy gore or special effects or just weird, dark stories. I want to be scared. I want those moments to scare the shit out of me.
As much as at the time when I'm shaking, you know, and terrified and my I'm breathing fast or shallow, you know, to try to stay quiet. I mean, it does really turn me into a child. I was terrified of the dark as a child, and I've been watching horror movies since before I was even born. Like, I mean, like, my mom would go to see when she was pregnant with me, and it never stopped. I mean, all my life. The first thing that really scared the shit out of me was Salem's Lot when it was released on television originally. I was a wee tot. I mean, very wee when that came on. But we watched it. And for 12 years, I had to sleep with my neck covered. You know, but I love it.
Right.
You know, I love that feeling. And at the time, I'm cursing myself. Like, why do you do this shit to yourself? But then the next day, I'm like, fucking hey, let's do it again.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
So for me, Insidious, it had some scary, it had its jump scares. There were some really creepy moments. The demon was genuinely a creepy fucking character. And I think it was very much just because of the face paint they used and the eyes and the mouth. It's a whole, the look of that demon was fucking fantastic. The old woman was creepy as shit. The rest of the ghosts we saw, not so much. They were just sort of there. They didn't really do much for me, but the old woman and the demon were probably the two creepiest elements of that movie. The little kid that ran around was a little bit creepy, and the guy with the fucked up face was kind of creepy too.
Really, it was just that he was to me, what got me with him is, like, you know, one second he's pacing outside the window, and I don't like things pacing outside the window. That's left over from Salem's Lot. I don't like anything outside the windows.
Right.
And so he's pacing outside the window, and then suddenly he's in the fucking room. And the thing about these is that you can classify them as jump scares. Mm. Technically, I think that's, yeah, I would. But for me, I completely let myself go when I was watching this, mainly because I wanted to see, you know, having seen it before, will it affect me as much as if I'd never seen it? And, you know, I have to say it did. I love just letting myself go and completely immersing myself in the atmosphere.
Right.
And so I gave myself over to it, and it got me. It did. And it not only did it just, it wasn't just like, boo, gotcha. I was genuinely terrified. You know, I mean, I was like crawling up the sofa at times, you know, and I'm just like, I wish I had a video camera on me, because I'd be laughing myself out, you know, laughing my ass off at myself right now. But, and you know, but I don't find that embarrassing, because if I can't get moments like this, then why even bother?
Exactly.
That's exactly what I'm in it for. And I'll have to say that, you know, if anyone is out there has not seen it and they love to let themselves go, you just want to get into it. And if ghost things that don't belong in your house, being in your house, creep you out, I really think this movie would do it.
Yeah.
You know? I mean,
for a PG-13 movie, I would say this was easily one of the best PG-13 horror films I have seen in a long time. This was definitely, I was really, really impressed, because, like I said, I was a huge fan of Saw. I was really disappointed with Dead Silence. And with this one, I was just like, I don't know. I wanted to trust him again, but after Dead Silence being a letdown, I was like, all right, well, let's see. And sure enough, the creepy old lady was the beginning of it. I'm like, oh god, that's fucking creepy. And then the demon, and then everything else was just like creepy moment after creepy moment. Just fantastic movie. And
I was so happy when you said that you're like, oh, you know, I forget what you said exactly, but it was something like, you know, can't wait to talk about it. I really enjoyed Insidious.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Those words, I was like, oh, yes, thank you. Because
yeah.
I wanted you to enjoy it, because I enjoy it so much.
Yeah, I mean, loved it. I thought it was great.
It's like,
I don't know necessarily if it was, if that was what, I take a generic Ambien to help me sleep, because I have terrible insomnia. And
I'm right there with you.
The side effect of that is that these fucking pills give me ridiculously vivid dreams, which right. typically is not a problem. However, last night, after the marathon of Primeval, Insidious, and then deciding to watch Party Monster as the pills were taking effect.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I had two horrible fucking nightmares last night that I cannot remember. All I know is that I woke up twice terrified and going, fuck. So I don't know necessarily if it was Insidious's doing, but if it was, then bravo to both of those gentlemen who made the film, because I have not had a movie hasn't given me nightmares since I was a kid. So if that was
meanwhile, I'm laying in bed looking around me terrified. I actually had to, I wasn't going to say this, but I had to call a friend of mine to come over and stay with me because I could not go to sleep. And I was like, it's 3 o'clock in the morning. I can't sleep. I have to be at work. I have to sleep.
Yeah.
I can't sleep. I'm scared. And it wasn't even just that, oh, I can't sleep. It was, I was terrified. Like I kept looking around me. I kept turning around. Every time I hear a noise, I'm just like, this is fucked up.
Yeah.
You know, I'm laying in bed with my cell phone on flashlight mode. You know? Just like, and I'm even more terrified that I'm going to see something. You
right.
know, I'm just,
and I think that's
classic. It was perfect. I was 7 years old again.
Exactly.
You know?
And I have those moments sometimes where, you know, the house I'm living in now is kind of old, and it's like my parents are in their own room and I've got my room in the back here, and you know, I go through the house and things creak and I'm used to that, and the, you know, the water heater clicks on and the heating system and stuff like that makes noises, and if it's really windy out, there's a tree like right outside my window that scrapes across my window, which scared the shit out of me the first time it happened, so I didn't realize what the fuck it was.
See, things at the window, not good.
Yeah. I think it's a tree that overhangs part of our roof that scratches on the roof. It sounds like people are walking up there. So there's weird noises. I'm used to that now. But there are times when I'm trying to go from like my room to the kitchen. I have to go through the office area and then down through this long hallway into the kitchen. And if my neighbor across the way, we have a window in the hallway that's also our laundry room, if our neighbor across the way, if their back porch light is off, it is pitch fucking black in that hallway, and it is really fucking hard not only to see where the hell I'm going because it's pitch goddamn dark, I'm trying not to trip over the, you know, our cat boxes or our, you know, washer and dryer, but it's just like it's pitch dark and I'm staring straight through the hallway, and there's these two kind of diamond shaped like frosted glass windows at the very front of the house by the door. And they reflect like the light from the street, and it's always kind of just weirdly kind of yellowish. So at like 3 o'clock in the morning, if I'm like half awake and I'm going to get something to drink, it's just like, fuck. It's like I'm back to being a kid again. I'm like, oh shit, not only do I have to try and navigate this thing in the dark, but I have to remember that there's nothing in the dark that's gonna get me, because I'm 26 goddamn years old. There's nothing there. But in the back of my mind, it's like, there's something there. There's something
there's
there.
Always
there's always something there. It's like, and
there's something there, and it's blacker than the black.
Exactly.
You know, it's darker than the dark, and you can see it moving.
Yeah.
If you try really hard, like if you're looking, you know, and you're terrified, you can see shit moving in the dark.
Oh, yeah.
And you'll fuck yourself up, you know.
It's like,
it's great.
For a while there, I was like, I hated looking at my mirror, because the way my bathroom is set up, it's just strange that like the light, you have to go into the bathroom to turn the light switch on, and the mirror is like behind the shower wall. So it's like you walk in to turn on the light, and then the light comes on above the mirror. So it's like, boom, the mirror is right fucking there.
Ooh,
and if I'm not paying close enough attention, I just catch it out of the corner of my eye. And I'm like, oh shit. It's like, God damn it.
Now, did you think at all about the Poltergeist similarities when you were watching this?
I actually have to confess, I have never seen Poltergeist.
You know, that's so weird, because I was going to bring it up, and I'm like, something, I feel like you've never seen it. Nope. That's so stupid because I'm not a psychic or anything, you know. But I don't know. I feel like maybe it was because you hadn't brought it up.
Yeah.
Because I feel like if you had, then you would have, because it's kind of undeniable. I don't think that I wouldn't say that anything was stolen or anything like that. You know, I don't hate anything about this movie, and I'm not going to hate on anything about this movie. As a matter of fact, I see it even more as more homage than anything else, I guess, because one of the Geek Squad, one of the Geek Squad's name was Steven. Mm-hmm. And one of the investigators that comes to the house in Poltergeist's name is Steven as well. And so they have kind of parallel characters. I mean, you can – the same stuff doesn't happen, but you can kind of see where they kind of play off each other. Right. I mean, I can definitely see the influence from when this was written. They were influenced by that film in all good ways.
Right.
In all good ways. I mean, I have nothing negative to say about it. It's just interesting. And so if you're watching it, and I'm a huge Poltergeist fan, so I'm watching it and I'm making these mental connections through the entire film, like, oh, well, that kind of reminds me of this, and that kind of reminds me of that. But it's good because that's a good experience for me. Yeah. So it just made it that much more of a good experience for me because it was done reverently and, it was almost like paying tribute, not out in the open, but just slight little.
You know, one
reference.
Of those sort of subtle things that if you know what to look for, it's there.
Right, right. And it's not, but there's nothing, you wouldn't go, oh, that's a ripoff.
Yeah.
Because, you know.
Yeah,
not...
I really enjoyed the story. I thought it was very original. Like I said,
did too.
Patrick Wilson
never seen
was.
Anything like that before,
yeah, Patrick know? Wilson was fantastic. I was actually really impressed that. You know, originally I thought, oh, okay, well, you know, the kid's in a coma and there's these ghosts trying to get at him. Okay, well, maybe he's haunted because now they've moved houses. And then we get into this whole thing about the other side and all that other stuff and how it's part of his dad is involved with it. And you're like, oh, wow, that's great. And I think that I have to give James Wan a lot of credit because he picks fantastic actors for his films.
Oh, definitely.
I saw with Cary Elwes and Shawnee Smith, Danny Glover, this one with Patrick Wilson and Lin Shaye. And Patrick Wilson is such a good actor anyway, but the one scene that I was just, and if you follow me on Twitter, dear listeners, you saw this, was I was watching Insidious and the scene where he's looking at his son's drawings, he's looking at Dalton's drawings on the board and he starts crying. I was just like, why isn't he working more? Why isn't Patrick Wilson in fucking everything?
I agree with that. I love him. I think he's phenomenal.
I was introduced to him through Hard Candy, and that's one of those movies that the first time I saw it, I was like, holy shit, this is awesome.
Yeah, the both of them, yeah. Ellen Page and Patrick Wilson, were so just over the top amazing in that film. I was blown away
and
by the performances alone.
The story and then their performances are really what made that movie so good. And we'll probably review that at some point as well. And then again, I saw him in Little Children because I love what's her name? The actress who was in that. I'm drawing a blank. She was in Titanic.
Kate Winslet. Yeah,
I really like her. And so they were both amazing in that. And then Jackie Earle Haley is in Little Children and he's fucking amazing in that. So, and then of course he was in Watchmen, which I saw because I'm a huge fan of the Watchmen comic and really enjoyed the movie.
I liked it a lot.
Yeah. And so I think I sort of had a passing reference initially when Insidious came out. I was like, oh, Patrick Wilson's in it. And then that was about as far as I thought. And then finally, when I saw it last night, I was like, wow, this is really fucking good. And he's, you know, I think the problem that a lot of horror movies tend to have is that you've got good actors in them, but either the writing's not the greatest or you've got good writing with not so great actors. And when you've got something like this, where it's a fairly fantastical kind of story, but you've got solid actors like Patrick Wilson and Lin Shaye in it to really anchor the story, it really, really helps just pull everything together and make it more realistic.
Also, Barbara Hershey, she kind of dropped out of the scene for a while, and then she's been coming back, like with Black Swan and this. And she looks a little worse for the wear. Bless her heart. I mean, I do wish that she had aged a little better. But I always enjoy seeing her. And the interesting thing I think about her being cast in this film is, like, did you ever see The Entity?
Yes, I've seen about half of that.
I thought that was interesting that they pulled her in for this movie. And I don't know that it necessarily had anything to do with the fact that she was in The Entity, but I think it's nice, you know.
Yeah, I recognized her, and I couldn't remember why I recognized her. Because I was like, wait, I know that actress. I just can't think of why I know her. And I didn't, for whatever reason, I didn't register it when I was on the IMDb page. But yeah, I think it was probably I saw her in Black Swan. That's what triggered it. But
yeah,
I did.
I thought she was great in Black Swan, you know.
And I saw part of the Entity. God, I was probably like 12 or 13. And my dad rented it on VHS. And I watched like half of it. I just remember the terrible mechanical boob. And that was just the one scene that sticks out in my mind, is that ridiculous, like, prosthetic fake boob thing, the entity, yeah, oh, God.
Grabbing onto. Yeah.
I just remember thinking, that's really fake. So, wrapping up Insidious, I highly recommend it. This is definitely a 5 out of 5 for me. If you haven't seen it, you need to see it. Although, hopefully, you didn't get spoiled, because we totally spoiled the ending. Well, we didn't really spoil the ending, we just spoiled most of it. And I don't want to spoil the very ending of it, because that was pretty fucking awesome.
I don't think we spoiled that much. I mean, there's still so much to be had from this movie.
And the performances alone are worth the almost 2-hour running time. Because it was
totally
it did feel a little bit long at points. But
I was glad about that.
Yeah, it was. One,
you know, I really didn't want it to be over.
Yeah,
and
I kept glancing at the time on. I was like, damn, this is like 1 hour and 42 minutes. This is really fucking long. But it moves at a nice enough pace, and enough stuff is happening that it doesn't drag. But it does feel a bit long at times, where it just there's points where it just, you know, it really slows down. And it actually really works for the story that it does slow down, but it's just like, if you're conscious of the time, of how long it's running, you're just like, oh my God. But pacing-wise, it's fantastic. Like I said, it does feel a little long at points, but it's one of those things that if you just ignore that and go back to just letting yourself get into it, it's fucking fantastic. And the visuals are just A-plus visuals. This was definitely a great, great movie by both these guys. I'm excited to see what James Wan directs next. And I'm sure...
Hopefully it'll air more to this and Saw than to...
Dead Silence.
Dead Silence.
Which, honestly, I think Dead Silence is kind of the... It can be kind of equated to the sophomore slump. It's like, they knocked it out of the park with Saw. You know, it would have been great if they could have followed that up with a great movie like Insidious. But doing something like Dead Silence and not doing so well, it's sort of like, all right, well, you know, you fucked up your second movie, but that's okay, because, you know, the first movie you did was amazing, and now your third movie is also amazing, so.
Yeah. I would say, just please, if you haven't seen it, see it. And allow yourself to be that little kid again. Mm-hmm. You know, allow yourself to remember what it's like to be terrified of the dark and know that there's something in the dark that's going to get you and just let yourself go. And trust me, you will have a hell of a time.
Yeah.
And you might not be able to sleep, but you'll have a hell of a time.
Yeah. And don't be frightened off by that being PG-13, because I know a lot of horror fans, there's always a lot of, you know, complaining on the internet about PG-13 horror movies. And I can agree with it to a point, but this film, and I would say The Uninvited, which I chose for one of the best of my, when I did my decade retrospective on the blog, was one of my best of the decade, along with its original, the film it's based on, The Tale of Two Sisters, which is another fantastic film. If you guys haven't seen that, check that out. But The Uninvited, I initially was really against, because I thought there was no way they could improve on A Tale of Two Sisters. And they didn't necessarily improve on it, but they did a damn good job of translating into an American film. And for a PG-13 movie, I was really impressed with what they did with it. So you can't hate on every PG-13 horror movie that comes out just because it's PG-13. You know, give them a chance. Some of them are good. Some of them aren't going to be good. It's the same thing with R-rated horror movies. Some of them are good and some of them aren't. So
I try to make it a practice not to hate on anything until I've seen it. Yeah. You know, I give everything a chance. You know, well, all right, most things.
Yeah.
Some things, I guess I can't. I'm not that perfect.
Yeah. Some we things all have our prejudices. Just,
but you know, I try. I try really hard. Because you never know when you're going to be surprised.
Yeah. So, on a 1 to 5 scale, what would you give Insidious?
I give it a solid 5.
All right. So that's
can't scare the shit out of me like you did, like this movie did twice, and not let me take it all away. I mean, that just wow. I gave it a 9 out of 10 on IMDb. That's only, and I just did that as a matter of fact. I just clicked my rating. The only reason was I was just like, wow, 10 points, that's a lot.
Yeah. You know?
I can't really give it that much, but it's so good. Yeah. And it currently has a 6.8 average on IMDb. And I wanted to bump it up a little bit because I feel like it really deserves it.
Yeah. So that is it for this week's episode. Next week, we will be back with House of the Devil for our feature presentation, which I have not yet seen, although I've heard nothing but good things about it. So I'm excited for that one.
And that's my opinion. Very excited.
Yes. And we will be doing Retard Dead for the, it came from the Instant Queue. So that should be fun. I seem to remember hearing about that one a long time ago, and then now it's finally available on Instant Queue. So excited for that too. So as always, Facebook, like the Facebook page. It's facebook.com/devourtheblog. Subscribe via iTunes. Leave a comment or review. Follow me on Twitter @ddelamorte. Email me at centibitedave@gmail.com. Are you on Twitter at all, Jamie?
I am. I'm at maven1974.
Okay.
Follow you can her. Also reach me at maven1974@gmail. Okay. And Facebook /maven1974. You see a trend developing here?
All right. So there you go, folks. Email us, contact us. We will be happy to take your
whatever
you want to send us. If you hate the show, that's fine. If you like the show, that's even better. But, you know, subscribe, leave a review. That would be awesome. And, yeah, if you're expecting the Paranormal Activity 3 review, it's coming eventually, as will be the Exorcism Extravaganza that I was originally planning for this episode, but put off because I just didn't want to do it, quite frankly.
And there is no better reason than that.
Yeah. I wrote a whole script out for what I wanted to say about The Exorcist, but then I decided, meh, I don't want to do it. So, that's it for this week, folks. I will update the contact info that plays at the end of the show later with all of Jamie's information as well. So that's it, and we will be back for episode 10. To contact Devour the Podcast, you can email us at CenobiteDave@gmail.com. That's CenobiteDave@gmail.com. You can follow me on Twitter @ddelamorte. That's DDellamorte. You can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/devourtheblog. You can subscribe on iTunes, search for Devour the Blog, or visit the website devourtheblog.wordpress.com. Our intro song is entitled Gloom Horizon by Kevin MacLeod and can be found at incompetech.com.